What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Dr. Football Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien. Joining me, as always, the CEO of HedgeBetter, Justin Fine. We are recording remotely tonight. I am in my real live medical office in Dedham, Massachusetts. Justin at the HedgeBetter Studios in Braintree. Justin, man, what is the word? What is going on, my friend? How are you this evening?
You know,
this summer-like evening.
I was, you know what? You took the words right out of my mouth. How often do you get a streak of days like this in October? I mean, the weekend was beautiful. Today's beautiful. You can't ask for much more.
It's gorgeous, but I think October is the most underrated weather month of the year. I really think we get a fair amount of good weather this time of year. It goes up and down, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. But no, enjoy it while it lasts, because it's gonna shift on a dime.
Just it. Yeah. It can change so fast, yeah. Especially around here.
Yep.
But I don't think people are tuning in to hear us talk about the weather, Justin. This is the ultimate Patriots Dr. Football podcast. We are talking Patriots. We are talking football. And we are talking about a team that is just in, let's face it, complete disarray after Sunday's loss in London against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, they look so undisciplined. I mean, great start. You know, you jump out 10-0. You look like you're putting it together. You came well prepared, ready to play, and then they totally just dropped the ball. They looked like the Jaguars. The Jaguars made them look like the Jaguars.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. We got a great roster of topics tonight. We're gonna get through all of it. We're gonna get into the game. We're gonna get into some of the. I think the bigger and more concerning issues around this team right now, Justin. So if you're ready, let's just get right to it with the kickoff. That is the opening take to set the table for this podcast. And I'm just going to dive right in, man. There is losing. And then there is what happened to the Patriots on Sunday. The Patriots were dominated, Justin, by a 1-5 team that was literally one loss away from firing their head coach. They didn't just lose to that team. I think you could say that they were outclassed by that team. And to me, that is a shocking testament to where this franchise is right now. You cannot blame the quarterback anymore, because he's no longer a problem. The quarterback is playing well. But there are so many things wrong with this team, this franchise, beyond that. And I want to start with the coach, because I think that is, to me, the biggest area of concern. I'm just going to say it, Justin. Some people will disagree with this. Some people will say this is unfair, and maybe it is a little unfair. Gerard Mayo, as a head coach, is in way, way over his head right now. I like the guy. I think he could be a head coach one day, a good head coach one day. I really do. And I actually kind of feel sorry for him right now. And the reason I feel sorry for him is because he was put in a position that he is obviously not ready for yet. And the fact of the matter is, this guy needed 5 more years of experience, with experience of a couple of years at least as a coordinator, before he was ready for a job like this. Right now, he's not ready for this job. It shows in every way. He doesn't know how to handle the locker room. He doesn't know how to make the acumen to coach during the game. Yesterday's loss tells me this thing has a chance to really go south this year. And, you know, through 7 games, I'm sorry, this has been a huge, huge mess. It has been, they are literally the dregs of the league. They are the worst team in the league. But then it's all the off the field stuff, which has just been a huge mess in this locker room. Guys getting arrested, everything just that could go wrong has. Justin, your thoughts on the Gerard Mayo's head coaching experience through his first 7 games with the Patriots?
Yeah, well, I think one of the biggest things, you know, that we got to hit on, you know, you might have mentioned it, but it's how undisciplined this team looks. Like, this team is, you know, we thought the last few years were bad. This team shooting themselves in the foot, stupid penalties, stupid mistakes. Like, this year's team is taking that to a whole new level. I'm sitting there watching the games, and it just seems like the flags are constant. They're constant, and they're in some of the biggest moments too. And you know, when you have a defense that's as hurt as they are, you know, you talk about their inability to stop the run, right? Well, look, they lose, they lose Christian Barmore, they lose Matthew Judon, they lose Juwan Bentley, they lose Jabril Peppers. that defense is a shell of that, of itself, a shell of the defense that we expected coming into this year. You have an offensive line that just keeps getting cobbled together week in, week out. They can't seem to find a consistent rotation, can't seem to find something that works. And you still have a bunch of rookie wide receivers, a rookie quarterback, a running back who is a fumbling problem. There's a lot wrong. In penalties and stupid mistakes are the last thing you need. This team is not just flawed, but they're undisciplined right now.
I agree. They're extremely undisciplined right now. And they consistently make mistakes and errors that leave you just like slapping your hand against your head and being like, what is going on?
Yeah.
We did see a lot of that at the end of the Bill Belichick tenure, in all fairness,
right?
Whether it's gotten worse this year or not, I guess, you know, you could argue it certainly has. What I think, Justin, and I'm certainly no, you know, expert, but my sense is that Gerard Mayo lacks the acumen that he needs to make adjustments and schemes and decisions in games to put these guys in position to win. And I think that is one thing that is really concerning to me, because I don't know how you get over that. The only way you get that acumen is you get experience. And Gerard, the problem that I see right now, it's a math problem. The amount of time it's going to take Gerard Mayo to get the experience that he needs to be a good head coach, by that time happens, he's going to have lost this locker room and done so much damage, okay, in terms of the locker room, that I don't think this situation is going to be salvageable anymore. And that, I think, is what the real problem here is.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. You know, he made that comment the other day, and he had to walk it back, right? He called the team soft. Then he walked it back and said, oh, they were playing soft. When you're at the point where you got to start walking back your comments, yep, when you're criticizing your team, I mean, it's either one of two things. It's either your inexperience is showing in how you speak and you're speaking inaccurately in a way that isn't representative of the team, or you're speaking in a way that is causing division inside your locker room. And I'm sure the last thing these guys want to hear from Gerard Mayo, who, as you noted, right, him and the rest of the staff seem pretty ill-prepared. I think the last thing they want to hear is that they're playing soft, because I don't know. Look, maybe I'm wrong. If you asked me what the Patriots' biggest problem was in the this season, I wouldn't say that they were playing soft.
Yeah, it's talent.
Right.
It's talent.
Right.
And you know what? First, I'm glad you brought up the soft comment, because that was going to be the next thing I was going to bring up.
Yep.
I thought that was a huge mistake by Mayo, for the reason you just illustrated. Where does this guy get the right at 1-6? Skipped three steps to get his current job, by the way.
Yeah.
1-6, lost six games in a row. Thing looks like a disaster. Where does this guy get the right to call anyone out publicly? It's not untrue, by the way. There might be some truth in the fact maybe they're not playing as tough as they should be. Fine. You go into the meeting Monday morning and you say that behind closed doors.
Yeah.
You don't throw guys under the bus publicly when you yourself, Mayo, have not done a good job coaching this team.
Yeah, 100%. But to the point you just made, right, it is a talent issue. Like, they have a lot of gaping holes. And, you know, look, maybe you can call out certain guys for not playing as hard, or certain units for not playing as hard as you'd like. But I don't think softness has been the overall Achilles heel of this team this year. I think it's a lot more, there's a lot larger issues that are playing a role, like you said, specifically the talent in
the scheme. I think exactly, you can't the overlook the scheme. Like, right, they're not putting these guys in positions to win. So if you're a guy that on that defense that's been here for a few years, and you just had Bill Belichick, say what you will about him and all he did wrong the last 4 years, and by no means am I saying they necessarily should have kept him, okay, that's a whole separate discussion. But one thing Belichick could do is he could coach X's and O's.
Yeah.
And if you're you know, one of these guys, and you just had Bill Belichick always put you in the best X's and O's position to win, and now you have Gerard Mayo, and you're clearly seeing he's not doing that, and then this guy, this coach, Mayo, calls you out in public and calls you soft, which has to be one of the most insulting things you could say to a professional football player, one of the most damaging things you could say to them. I'm sorry. That is going to undermine Mayo's credibility and really cause him to lose support in his own locker room. And I think that's what's happened.
Exactly. And look, I mean, let's talk about the coaches in totality, right? Obviously, Gerard Mayo, you know, we're seeing it, but look, Covington is a first-time defensive head coach, right? Alex Van Pelt was like the 11th choice for offensive coordinator. So you look at this and you say, where is the experience? Where is the advanced scheming? Where is that next level knowledge coming from in this organization?
Yeah, there's nowhere. There's absolutely nowhere. I mean, it was we talked about this, Justin, back in January. So no one can accuse us, if you go back and listen to what we recorded back then, of like being revisionist or revisionist history or hindsight. We said this at the time, which is, if you're going to bring in a guy like Gerard Mayo to coach your team, you damn well better be sure you surround him with extremely experienced assistant coaches. They did the complete opposite.
Yeah.
They brought in a bunch of guys that were just as inexperienced as Mayo was. Exactly. And the results are so predictable. They are so predictable that this team is struggling like this. This is what happens, Justin, when you hire a head coach because he has good charisma and good chi. And that's what Robert Kraft did. Okay. But the problem is, he doesn't know how to do the job on the field, and he doesn't know how to do the job off the field. And it has shown every single day since they hired him in January.
Yeah. I totally agree. It's so weird, because I watch this team play, and I know I'm going to kind of contradict myself, because I keep saying we have a talent issue, and we do. I think that's blatantly obvious, but I don't think we're as bad as we're playing. We are still underperforming as a team, right?
I mean, there are holes, but they're not as bad as they've looked.
No. When you're underperforming, you know, you look at the root cause of it, and I think it's fair to say that it's the coaching and the scheming that is leading to the underperforming. It's highlighting the fact that we are devoid of talent.
Yep. Agreed. But you know, no one was expecting them to be in the Super Bowl this year. I think we all acknowledge that no matter what they did in the offseason or whatever, there are going to be holes on this roster.
Right.
But that said, is Gerard Mayo getting the best out of the limited talent that he has at his hands? And the answer is, in my opinion, no. They look like a sub. They're the worst team in the NFL right now. They're actually worse than they were last year.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really not overly complicated at this point. I think the problem should be pretty blatantly obvious. Like it's talent and it's scheming. And I don't know what else you could throw in there, but it's very clear to me at this point.
How about a culture problem too? And you know, how many times, Justin, is this guy, Gerard Mayo, going to let his mouth get him in trouble? Going back to day one in January, he said things he shouldn't have said. He got in trouble. He just did it. He put his foot in his mouth so bad after that game Monday night, calling his team soft, and then walking it back the next day and saying, oh, we weren't soft, we just played soft. Well, which is it, Gerard? And this guy has a habit of shooting off with his mouth and saying things he doesn't need to say.
Yeah.
It's great to be honest, but when it starts to erode your credibility in your own locker room because you just can't stop from saying and barfing out your truth whenever you feel it, I'm sorry, that's another huge problem for Gerard Mayo.
Agreed. Totally agree.
So I don't know. I don't know where they go from here. Let me ask you this, Justin. Did you hear Belichick's comments on the Pat McAfee show yesterday?
I did not, no.
Oh, you got to hear those, man. They were great. He, no holds barred, just clobbered Gerard Mayo, basically said that they were the best run defense in the league last year, that he doesn't think the players on this team are soft. They didn't have this problem last year. It was a pretty pointed shot at Mayo.
Well, I mean, look, I think to play devil's advocate, you lost three of the best components of that run stopping defense. You know what I mean? So it's not exactly a level playing field, not having Barmore, Bentley and Jude on. So, it's still definitely a pointed shot. I don't think it's as accurate maybe as he's portraying it, but yeah, I mean,
if you were to make volumes, a blame pie of this mess, Justin, and you were going to divvy up the blame for where this franchise is, because they are now the worst team in the NFL. I think they hold that title this week. Who gets how much blame here, and how much blame do you give Bill Belichick for what they're going through here? Because let's not forget that the cupboard was extremely bare when Belichick left last January.
look, I give, here's the thing. If we were having this conversation 1 year, if we were having this conversation and it was, you know, far out after the Belichick era, I would say, look, I mean, this team eventually they need to rebuild, but I think you're right to point out the fact that we're still not even a full year removed from Bill Belichick. Right. And I think we had plenty of fair criticisms back during the end of his career about how we were devoid of talent even back then. So the talent is not a new problem, right? Talent is not a new problem. So I think it's fair to blame Bill for the fact that we didn't have talent. And then look, I mean, don't forget the fact that we went and chased some talent this offseason. We just weren't a destination where people wanted to come play, wanted to come sign, right? That was part of the problem too. So at least
whose fault was that the last few years?
So that's kind of my point, right? Is we get a new regime. They try to more aggressively bring in some talent. The organization's already bare and not at a place where free agents want to come or be traded to because of Bill's doing. But I also, again, you know, I don't think Robert Kraft's name should be left out of this.
Left out of it? Absolutely. He's right in the thick of it.
Exactly. I think
the responsibility.
Look, going back over the last couple of years, right? We've had this conversation off and on.
We have. And what have I always been? A Kraft defender.
You've always been a Kraft defender, right? And I think
it's hard to do that now.
Exactly. I think we're at the point now where we have to start talking about Robert Kraft's role and how this organization has started to kind of crumble right beneath our very, you know, eyes.
Well, just to go back to the original point. I mean, look, Belichick takes a huge chunk of responsibility.
He does.
For where this franchise is, because it was a mess the last 3 or 4 years. You can't deny it. But all that said, you remember in the episode we recorded after the Jets game, my take was that Robert Kraft, you're on the clock, that you could blame Belichick for everything up to that point. But from that point, it all fell to Kraft. And the reality is, Justin, that everything that's happened to this franchise, with the exception of the drafting of Drake May from January on, has actually gone in the wrong direction and made this franchise worse off. And whether you blame Kraft, Mayo, Wolf, or some combination thereof for that is independent of what Belichick did. They have actually gone in the wrong direction since they fired Bill Belichick last January.
Yeah, 100%. And I think we kind of knew that it was going to be a rocky road, but it's actually looking a little bit more rocky than I think we even anticipated at this point.
More rocky than we anticipated. My point, I guess, is that there's plenty of blame to go around.
There is.
And it did not have to be as bad as it's been. I'm sorry. This did not have to be this bad. They could have taken steps in the other direction and maybe, you know, made some progress. Instead, they're going the other way. That has nothing to do with Bill Belichick.
How much of that do you attribute to Drake May sitting for 5 weeks?
Well, that's a great question, and we're never going to know the answer to that, because you could argue it either way. If May had played from week one and he looks like he did the last 2 weeks, you could argue that they have a couple more wins under the belt. They beat Miami. They beat Seattle.
Right.
And maybe they're competitive in San Francisco. And it just feels very different.
Right.
Other side of the coin, you know, maybe he really wasn't ready yet and you would have ruined him. My sense, Justin, from watching this kid for 2 games, is that he would have been fine if they had put him in week one against the Bengals, and they probably win another game or two and it looks a lot different. So I think that was a mistake.
Yeah,
I really do.
I agree.
How about this, Justin? And we talked about this last week, and I want to ask it to you again, because I just feel like this loss was such a game changer for the way that this all went down this weekend and everything that's happened since then, which is there any chance that if they go winless or they end up 2-15 or 1-16 the rest of the way, that this is a one and done for Jerod Mayo?
I just can't see it. I think there's two different ways to look at it. You look at it, does he deserve to be a one and done, especially with some of the available talent that may be looking for head coaching jobs in 2025? And then is he likely to be let go? And I really don't think he's likely to be let go. Can you see Robert Kraft doing that? I mean, he has this press conference and he tells us about this was, you know, part of a whole life-changing plan and experience he had, you know, this whole religious thing and this and that and the bond that they have. And this plan has been in place for a while. And you think he's just going to get rid of him after 1 year?
Could I see Kraft doing it? Yes, I could. I really could if it's that bad. But I could also see something else. I could see Gerard Mayo walking away after 1 year. If this really is as bad as it's been, I could see Mayo throwing his hands up and saying, look, I wasn't ready yet. I'm going to go get a job as a linebackers coach, work my way back up to coordinator, get the experience I need, and come back in 6-7 years as a head coach again and get a second bite of the apple. I don't think it's good for Gerard Mayo to be in this situation if he's not ready for this job yet. And I wouldn't be surprised if this really goes south. I wouldn't be surprised if Kraft pulls the trigger, and I wouldn't be surprised if Mayo walks away.
I mean, I don't know. I think the firing is more likely than him walking away. You think he would actually walk away from this opportunity?
If he's miserable. I mean, no, I don't. I think a firing is more likely. But yeah. I'm just saying, like, if it's not working, look, there's a big difference between a 4 or 5 win, 6 win season where you throw some building blocks down and you move into the next year versus a year where you get the number one draft pick and you're 1-16. Especially because you might have hit on the quarterback and you still couldn't win any games, then I think that that's an arrangement that really doesn't work for either side. And I don't feel like Kraft is someone that is going to stick with a bad deal. I feel like if it becomes that apparent, this was a mistake, I think Kraft will do what he has to do.
Well, I mean, look, you know, we've talked about some names that are out there. In some coaches that still don't have jobs in the 2024 season that, you know, I still think it's a little shocking. There's going to be talent out there. There's going to be opportunities.
There's a lot of talent, coaching talent out there. You know? And there's going to be a lot of coaches available this year that you're going to say, wow, if we paired that guy with Drake May, we could really have something here.
I agree. Yeah.
So my message to the Crafts and Mayo would, everyone involved would be like, look, if this goes really south this year, it is completely okay to admit that this was a huge mistake and to just move on after 1 year. Don't get stuck and be stubborn because you made this big mistake and you feel like you have to see it through. And I did look it up this week. It has happened 5 times in the last 5 years that a coach has gotten 1 season and been fired. And I can look it up actually right now if you want and give you the names, but it's happened 5 times in the last 5 years.
Interesting. 5 times in the last 5 years, huh?
Yeah. Talk a little bit. I'll look it up.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Look, if you would, to me, you would have to have an overwhelming contender coming in. Like, you couldn't just swap Gerard Mayo out for any guy off the street, right? It would need to be a big name, a big, big name. We've talked about like a Ben Johnson from Detroit, right? I think there's a couple other interesting candidates out there, but you're not just swapping Mayo out for anybody.
If Gerard Mayo doesn't right the ship this year for the rest of this year and show that he is capable and ready to do this job, I would get rid of him for Ben Johnson. I would get rid of him for Brian Flores. I would get rid of him for Sean McVay, who I think might be free this year. I would get rid of him for Mike Vrabel. There's 4 names right there that I would have zero hesitation about cutting the cord. Absolutely. And bringing in someone that I think could build the kind of program that they would be successful with.
Yeah, I agree with all 4 of those names completely. All right,
let me give you the names of the guys that got fired in the last few years.
Okay.
Frank Reich was 1 and done last year with Carolina.
Yep.
Lovie Smith with Houston in 2022, disaster. Nathaniel Hackett, 2022 with Denver, disaster.
Yep.
David Culley, Houston Texans, 2021, disaster. Urban Meyer, 2021 with Jacksonville, disaster. Freddie Kitchens. Okay, 2019 with the Cleveland Browns, disaster. Steve Wilkes, Carolina, 2018, disaster. Chip Kelly and Jim Tomasula, back-to-back, 2015, 2016, San Francisco 49ers, disaster. Rob Jasinski, Cleveland Browns, 2013. Mike Malarkey, Jaguars, 2012. And Hugh Jackson, Vegas Raiders, 2011. So that's the last 10 years worth, or 11, 12 years worth. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 12 guys in the last 12 years have been 1 and done.
Yeah.
So it's not unheard of.
No, I guess it's not. You know, the thing that's so funny is, you know, you're running through that list of names and you're naming.
Did you think it was that many? Because I didn't.
I didn't think it was that many, but you're naming organizations that you would expect to have that problem. You know what I mean? And you don't think of New England as one of those organizations. And it's crazy to think that we could potentially be in the running with the Browns and the Jaguars and the franchises that we look at as a joke.
Houston's on there twice.
Yeah.
Jacksonville's on there twice. Yeah. Cleveland's on there twice.
So. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. All right, Justin, any more thoughts about this Jerod Mayo situation and the general state of this team? We're going to move on and talk a little bit about the game.
Let's do it. Let's get into the game.
Okay. We got to start with what I would say is the lone bright spot on Sunday, which is Drake May. Yep. I am not seeing, Justin, red flags when I watch the way Drake May plays. I know that he really hasn't been tested yet because neither of these games has been close.
Yeah.
But I feel like he has performed extremely well. I'm seeing a guy who handles pressures well, who makes good decisions, obviously has a ton of physical talent, is making the right reads. And I think he's got off to a great start so far. There were several times on Sunday when, you know, he pulled the ball down. He was going to throw a pass. It wasn't there. He didn't throw it. I'd love to see that from a young quarterback. Yeah. He didn't force anything. He didn't turn the ball over. I thought it was another step forward for Drake May on Sunday.
I did. And I mean, look, I'm sure you've seen the stat now going around social media, but two quarterbacks in history in their first two games of their rookie debut to throw for 5 touchdowns and 500 yards. And it's Dan Marino and Drake May. Right. You know, there's a lot to like with Drake May. I mean, he's still, don't get me wrong, you can still tell he's a rookie out there, right? He still kind of has that, like, you know, newborn giraffe finding his legs type of feel at times.
Yep,
but overall, I think very solid. And just in you know, you talk about the ability to impact and elevate an offense. His impact was instant. Right. And I think that's something that gives us hope, because there's obviously still a lot of building and improvement and development that needs to happen. But just to see that instant spark is very encouraging.
I mean, you know, you're right that he definitely still looks like he's still kind of finding his legs. But yeah. I also think you have to remember this team really isn't very good around him either. True. And I think a lot of it does come down to that. I mean, the pressure rate has literally been half with Drake May of what it was with Jacoby Brissett. But right. Let's not pretend and kid ourselves that this is a good offensive line. You know, he's made it all look better because he's a much better player than Brissett. Yeah. But a lot of the times where he does look a little disjointed or out of sorts, I do think it comes down to the fact that this team around him still isn't very good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, look, the team is the team, right? They are young, underdeveloped wide receivers. They're a shaky, shifting offensive line. It's an injured in beaten up defense, missing a ton of their key players. The team is the team, right? It is what it is as far as the talent. There's no, even no matter how much you scheme, you're not going to completely cover that up.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, I don't know, you know, I think May is covering up a lot of holes for them right now, just already, which is one of the more encouraging signs.
Sorry, who is covering up the
Drake May?
I thought you said Mayo.
May is covering up a lot of holes.
Yeah, he is. He's covering up some of those holes. And I think he's elevating the receiving core. I mean, look, Hunter Henry was that's two back-to-back really good games for him. He was signed here again. Yep. And he was signed in a big money as a free agent years ago or a few years ago, and they just re-signed him because he can play like that. He's talented. They drafted some of these younger guys because they're talented. We're starting to see that talent come to the surface.
Right. Or how about Kayshon Booty, who has done nothing in his first, you know, year and whatever of his career. Yep. And then now back-to-back games, he's had big plays in both games.
Yep. Yep. And now you're starting to see Pop Douglas get utilized a little bit more like he should. That athleticism and speed getting shown off. So, yeah, it's an instant impact.
Or even a no one like Jermichael Hasty, who I wasn't even sure if he belonged in the NFL. And all of a sudden, he's making a great play and scoring a touchdown on a play where, frankly, Drake May made a terrific read and a great throw with two rushers coming in unblocked at him, was able to, you know, stand, make the read, deliver, get the ball to Hasty. And now you see a guy making a play that I didn't even think was capable of making a play like that at the NFL level.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And notice again, you know, Hasty and Gibson playing meaningful minutes. Stevenson, you know, didn't really do much.
That might've been a little for the injury side of things too.
Fair. But I think, you know, I don't know. I feel like in general, there might be a shift coming. I don't know. I think the Patriots are regretting that extension.
Oh yeah. Bit. Well, that's a whole nother conversation. Yeah. I mean, so we at some point we should get in and go through like all these extensions and like maybe mid season type thing and say which ones look good and which ones they regret, because not all of them look like they were good decisions already.
No. Yeah.
All right. What about them getting off to this fast start, Justin? They started off great. Looked like they were in terrific position to win this game, 10-0, and then everything just kind of fell apart on both sides of the ball. They hit a real lull. I mean, we know on defense what happened. We already talked about it. They just like couldn't stop the run. Jacksonville ran the ball 18 straight times. They had scored 22 points in that second quarter. I've heard a lot of people criticize the Patriots for trying to go back to their running game after hitting a fast start by passing the ball a lot. I don't know if you have any thoughts about the way the Patriots called this game. Once they got that 10-0 lead, it felt like they kind of really got a little conservative again in the second and third quarter, maybe to their detriment.
Yeah, took their foot off the gas a little bit maybe.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't – look, this is a team that you can't afford to you can't afford to do that, obviously. I think that goes without saying. But I do wish they kind of kept it a little bit more aggressive. You know, you heard, I believe it was Alex Van Pelt made a comment to the effect of like, you know, oh, you know, Drake's great. Like if we could throw him 50 times a game, we would. It's like, well, you know what? Yeah. Why can't you? You're in London against the Jaguars. It's the second start. You're one in five. Why can't you be aggressive?
Against the worst pass defense in the league.
Exactly. Why can't you put the pedal to the metal and really see what you got in this kid and just get aggressive with the game calling? So if there was ever time to do it, it would have been then. I think it was a mistake to kind of let up and try to play the conservative clock game.
You know, I'm going to defend Alex Van Pelt a little bit on that, because I agree with you. They overdid it and got a little too conservative, but I kind of get what you're putting this kid out there in his second start. I get trying to go back to the running game. I think there was a couple problems. One is, you're right, they were too conservative and they should have realized that it wasn't working and moved away from it quicker than they did, which they didn't really do until the fourth quarter. Right. And the game was kind of already out of hand. And then the second piece, Justin, and it's just like to the point of football, like always being a team sport. And like the reality is, a huge part of the problem was they couldn't get off the field on defense. Would they have like 2-3 and outs in the second quarter? And the rest of the time, Jacksonville had the ball. Because you know, the Patriots defense couldn't get them the ball back. They really didn't get a lot of opportunities to try something different.
No, and look, what did Jacksonville do? Jacksonville stuck with what was working, right? I saw a stat near the end of the fourth quarter that Jacksonville hadn't thrown the ball since like 5 minutes left to go in the third.
They ran 18 straight times at one point.
18 straight times at one point. Yep. And it worked. We couldn't stop them, right? But again, that kind of goes to the point, I think, you know, of what we're saying earlier about the Patriots taking their foot off the gas. I think it's more so at this stage of the game, you go with what works. You go with what's effective. You're not at the point where you can get cute yet. I think they should have kept their foot in the gas. They were clearly having success through the air, being aggressive. And they didn't do it. Jacksonville, on the other hand, they realized we could not stop their run game, you know, at all. And they stuck with it. They pounded the rock and it worked. It worked overwhelmingly.
I mean, there's no question, I think, or feels like at least right now. And I guess we're going to see this over the next few weeks.
Yeah.
It feels like right now, Drake May is their best weapon, if not their best player. And I think this question of like how aggressive they are in taking the restraining bolt off of him is going to be one of the interesting things to watch over the next few weeks. Because to your point, you know, do you want this kid throwing the ball 50 times a game? Well, that really might be your best chance to win. And when they kind of abandoned the whole Alex Van Pelt scheme thing at the end of the game, that was really when they had their best drive since the first quarter, when they scored that late touchdown to KJ Osborne. Yeah. Could they get away with doing that against a decent team for 60 minutes? I think that's the question.
No, that is 100% the question. I mean, look, it's not, I'm not saying it would have been a walk in the park and they would have ran away with the game. I just think you have to stick with the aggression. And look, you know, if anything, use it for development. You got a bunch of first and second year receivers. You got a, like we said, a young shifting offensive line. You got a rookie quarterback in your second start. If anything, use the game to work out kinks, build chemistry, like really see what you got as far as potential. Like that's more so where I'm coming at it from.
Yeah. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. And I feel like the reality is that probably is their best chance to win.
Yeah.
When you look at the limitations of the team, you just hit on this. And I just want to bring up this too, 18 straight runs against the Patriots. Yeah. This is the third straight game the Patriots have given up more than 180 yards rushing against on the ground, which is just remarkably historically bad run defense. Is this what we're going to see all year? Because like, if I'm an opposing offensive coordinator, why would I throw the ball against this team? Like I would literally, you got to run the ball like 30 times against them and make them prove they can stop it.
Exactly. Exactly. You really don't need to overcomplicate things to beat this Patriots team right now. I agree. If I was playing the Patriots, I would do the same thing. I would pound it. And I would force them to stop me knowing that they lost their three best run stoppers and just force their hand.
Yeah. And when you talk about like, you know, like the team, the talent on this team not being as bad as they've been, I'm sorry. Like, I don't feel like the run defense should be as bad as it's been. I know they're missing some of their best players. I know, okay, Christian Ellis, he's not Ray Lewis, right? He's not Juwan Bentley even. Mm. You know, I still feel like they have a couple good linemen. I feel like Jelani Tavai is a good linebacker. They have good safeties. I don't think the run defense should be as bad as it is. Is there any chance or prayer, Justin, that they are able to figure out this run defense this year? Because I'm going to tell you something. If this is how they defend the run for the rest of the season, if this is really what they are, then they will be like 1-16 or 2-15. It will be hard to win no matter what Drake May does.
I agree. I could see it maybe getting a little better, but I don't think they fix it. I can't see how you fix it this year. I don't think you have the talent. I don't think you have, you don't have the horses to fix it this year.
Maybe if Barmore comes back at some point, I don't know. What
this really you would need Barmore. I mean, look, I'm picturing, you know, this defense in 2025, you got Barmore back, you got Bentley back. Maybe you draft, you know, Keon White's in year two, you draft another guy or two that can contribute. That'll be a defense that I'm excited with to see alongside a year two, you know, Drake May and the way this offense progresses. But right now, I just can't see this defense pulling it together. I think it's going to be their Achilles heel all year. And you're right. I think we're going to see some really promising stuff out of Drake May. And that doesn't mean that we still can't finish 1, 2, 3 wins.
Well, you know, it's funny because you look at all the holes on this roster, right? Yeah. And you're like, we're also focused on rebuilding this offensive line, which has been an issue for 4 years, and getting a wide receiver and rebuilding this offense. And it's like you try to plug up one. It's like a dam. You plug one hole in the dam and like another hole sprouts open. You've got to totally rebuild this front seven potentially now this offseason as well.
I agree. You know what, though? I will say at this point, the quarterback and the receivers / tight end room, That's the group I'm the least concerned about right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think them and maybe some of the secondary I'm okay with. But you got to rebuild your front seven on both sides of the ball.
It's almost like you have to go into this offseason. And I think like as much as you want to get that stud wide receiver, and they've certainly tried to have been unsuccessful, I mean, I feel like they're going to have to focus on rebuilding their front seven and their line and just rely on Drake May to make plays to a mediocre group of receivers next year, because they have so many holes to fill. They're actually going to have, they might have more holes to fill going into next year than they did going into this year. And that is scary,
right?
Especially because they filled their biggest hole, which was quarterback.
Right. I agree.
Okay. And then last thing I want to talk about this game on Sunday, Justin, and I'm very curious to hear what your take on this is. It's been one of the controversial topics discussed the last couple of days, and that is the decision to go for 2 points when they were down 8 late in the down 8 late in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And they were down 9 late in the fourth quarter, and they went for 2 to make it 7 instead of 1 to make it 8. I will tell you, I hated that decision. I said it before the time. I hate that analytics stuff. I think you have to put that stuff in its proper context, and this was not the time or the place to do that. There was a lot of time left in this game. If you didn't get the two, you know, I mean, the way this game was going, I just felt like you weren't going to get the ball back more than once. You had to stay in this game as long as you could with this young team and go for the extra point there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess so. Yeah, I was trying to think about it from the analytics side. So what? Are the analytics basically saying, you know, it's better to go for two at that point because then you know how you have to approach the rest of the game, whether you need one possession or two to tie it
yeah,
up.
Yeah, right? I like get it. I just think it speaks.
Right. I get it. I think it needs context, right? I think like when I hear that, that makes sense to me, right? From an analytical standpoint. But when you put it in the context of how that game was going and the ebbs and flows, you're right. It was probably better to try to play it safe there.
The Patriots, the way they were defending the run in that game, as we talked about, they were going to be lucky to get the ball back one time.
Right.
Right. So that's why you have to stay in that game. And it's like, look, I do this in my office all the time. The science of medicine versus the art of medicine. Just because the data says something works doesn't mean it's applicable to that individual situation. You have to put the data in its context. Right. And that's what the Patriots failed to do. And it's what the analytics movement at times fails to do. You know who would have done what the Patriots did, Justin? Brandon Staley, okay?
Yeah.
Nick Sirianni, okay? Who are some of the other analytics dweebs that have crashed and burned in this league the last few years? They would have all done that.
Yeah, yeah. No, they would. They would have. And you know what? It did kind of stink because you're right. Like, as soon as they didn't convert that, you just had the overwhelming feeling that the game was over at that
It was.
Point.
And it took the air out of their sails. This is a team that needed something to keep them motivated, engaged, something positive to get them back in that game and to sell out to get that last stop. And by going for two, they just completely took the wind out of their own sails. It was a math decision that did not have applicability to the real world. I'm a numbers guy. I'm a data guy, but I know the limitations of data as well. And in that case, I'm sorry, the decision-making and the leadership of this team, they completely failed with that. That was a terrible decision to go for two there.
Yeah, and one thing I'll add to that is, look, I know you got a bunch of young guys. You got a bunch of guys you're trying to develop in and get going. And I know that they really don't have a standout go-to guy to speak of, right? But I feel like in that situation, there's a couple of other targets on that offense that I could say should be your number one read before Jalen Polk, right? Like, I think Jalen Polk has some potential. He's at his ups and downs, but I think he's like the third or fourth, maybe even fifth option that you're drawing up a play for in that situation. I'm looking at Hunter Henry. I'm looking at DeMario Douglas, right? Before I'm even thinking about Jalen Polk, he was the first read. That play was designed for him.
And he was open.
He was open. He just slipped and
he slipped on his bottom.
Right. Exactly. And you know what? That happens. That can happen to the best of them. It happens to everybody. But just the fact that in a big situation like that, when you were going for two, you decided to draw up a play for Jalen Polk. I think, again, that goes to the scheme and some of the bad decision-making.
I almost look at it like this is the kind of stuff too that happens to bad football teams,
right?
Where like you're just like snake bitten and nothing goes right for you. And you know, the reality was, say what you will, whether it was a good decision or not, Jalen Polk broke free. The ball was there. He should have been open. It should have been a 2-point conversion.
I agree.
He should have got it. And it just like he falls on his ass. And I know it's a wet track. Jalen Polk does not have the best hands in the league. He's not Jerry Rice. But he is an NFL player, right? You expect that he should be able to make a cut and keep his footing, even on a wet track, falls on his ass, slips. That's it. Game essentially over.
Exactly.
Just terrible, like luck too, I feel like, in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. There's one more topic I want to get to for the Pats, and then we're going to take a look at the Jets game. But before we get to either of that, Justin, let's break it up a little. Let's break out the non-football topic of the week. Every week, best segment on the show. I actually, you know what? I'm changing up totally from what I told you. I told you we were going to do something about TV shows. I'm just feeling like a different vibe right now. So okay. I'm just going with this. Okay?
Go with it.
All right. The AI revolution is coming, Justin.
Oh, yeah.
What are you most afraid of artificial intelligence?
What am I most afraid of? Honestly, on a practical level, I'm afraid of automating out a large portion of the workforce. What are people going to do? when a robot can come in and do their job quicker, more efficiently, and for a fraction of the cost, what happens to the workforce?
What if you get in a situation where if you own a robot and then the robot goes to work for you and then you get paid for the robot, the work the robot does, right? But exactly. Then that leads into all kinds of like potential inequalities. Well, who's going to own all the robots?
Right.
Who's going to, you know what I mean? Who's going to get them all?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day when I saw the Tesla robot and I'm watching it interact. I don't know if you saw those videos. You see that at the AI conference? They had the Tesla robots down there.
I have to check it out.
Oh, they were bartenders. They were selling snacks, really? And food. Like, and these things are personable. They sound like humans. The conversations were seamless. Like, it was very creepy. But I'm thinking to myself, like, what happens if, like, you would never think a bartender would be automated out of a job. But like, what right. You know what I mean? What happens if all these weird, or not weird, but just, you know, niche markets and niche industries like start to automate through AI? It's going to be a big change. I don't know if we're ready for it.
What I will say, have you ever seen those Boston Dynamics robot yes. videos?
Yeah.
Like they make like the dog and the thing that does the flip. Like the people that do that, they should never, ever be allowed to go near the people that are doing the AI. Cause I feel like if you put the AI in like one of those things, now you're talking like crazy sci-fi shit. Like now we're out. Humans are out.
Exactly.
At that point.
Exactly. Oh, wow. If you're crazy, if you don't think that's coming soon, you know it, you know, that's right around the corner.
I think that's what people are concerned about. But what I'm going to tell you, and like, I have a totally different take on this. Like I am not as afraid of AI as everyone else is for a couple of reasons. One, first of all, is I still think it sucks. Okay. Yeah. I mean, my autocorrect doesn't even work on my phone. Like, you know what I mean? Like basic things, like, you know, you see these AI generated images, you can always tell they're AI. They're weird. They're creepy. You just know it. So there's, I don't know if they're ever going to quite be all the way there and figure it out. But second of all, and this is the reason I'm really not afraid, how could AI mess up this planet any more than we have? Okay. We have, like, people are scared of AI drivers, for example. Okay. One person dies in a car crash caused by a robot driver, and it will be like front page news.
Oh, yeah.
Every year, 40,000 people die on our roads, and we don't even bat an eyelash at it. Yeah. We all continue to drive. People drive like maniacs. They're drinking, they're smoking, they're driving fast, they're psychotic on the roads. Yeah. That's all fine. You know what I'm saying? Like, how could AI mess things up more than we already have?
I agree. You know what? You know what's one area that, now that you mention it, that I'm actually, you know, a little concerned about is it's our kids' ability to learn. They're learning. Like, you don't have to learn anything with AI anymore. That can do all your schoolwork, all your homework. Totally. Like, it can get you, like, there are AI programs right now. Like, if you're a college student, you don't have to do anything. Like, if you're a young kid, like, you know, you put a picture of your homework assignment and AI solves it for you, tells you all the answers. Like, I think it's going to impact how we learn.
What about the kid in like Hingham, was it, that his parents are suing the school because he did the AI to do his history report and he ended up getting in trouble for it and hurt him on his college admissions or something like that.
Exactly. And their argument was, well, AI didn't write the paper for him. They used it for research, but there's no way to tell. If I have AI write me something and I copy it and paste it into a Word document, you're never going to be able to prove.
Slap in a few spelling errors.
Exactly. You'll never be able to prove AI did it or didn't do it. You know, it's a very gray area.
It's kind of crazy if you think about it, but I just think I personally am a lot less concerned about the AI revolution. I would encourage him to look back at the history of our own species and our own planet, species on this planet, and then be like, you know, maybe it's time for the robots to get a crack at all this. Like, we've had our chance. We've done okay. We've come a long way. But we still have, like, we've still really messed up serious shit here.
Yeah.
Like, maybe it's time we give the robots a crack. We take a step back, let them do some things, see what they come up with.
Yeah, just see how objective they wind up being. Who knows? I'm sure it's going to be a lot of benefits in a lot of areas.
There will be. They could solve diseases. They could come up with new ways to treat cancers. And I mean, there could be a lot of good that comes from the AI, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're just going to enslave us and take over the world.
Yeah.
But beyond that, you know,
small trade-off.
All right. Good stuff. All right. Let's move on, Justin. Let's take a quick look ahead to the Jets game before we wrap up this edition of the podcast. I don't know if you have any thoughts about this game or this Jets team. I realized over the week why I loved that the Jets got Devontae Adams and why I love that move, Justin. And you know what it is? I love that move because I'm very confident that it was not going to work. The problem with that franchise was Aaron Rodgers. We said that last week. And that the Jets pushing all their chips onto the middle of the table was just going to be amazingly entertaining to watch it all crash and burn and fall apart. It started last Sunday night in Pittsburgh. That was a tough loss for the Jets. It's not going to be any better. They're worse this year than they were last year with Zach Wilson. That Jets team is in trouble, man.
They're in trouble big time. Now, that being said, I still think they beat us on Sunday because how are you going to stop? And how are you going to stop Breece Hall? Right. If you look at
and the other guy
and
other
Braylon kid. Allen, Braylon Allen, he's a tank. I mean, you look at what Tank Bigsby did to us. I mean, you know, these two guys are going to have an absolute field day, coupled with the fact that that's a much better defense than the Jaguars. I think it's going to be a tough one for us, but I'd like to be able to, to keep it competitive. I mean, I think it would be great, even if the Patriots don't win, to go out there and watch them compete with the Jets, because the Jets, they're one win better than us right now. Like, that's not, you know what I mean? Like, they should not be able to come in and spank us. Like, we should be able to compete and hold our own.
They're one win better than us, and they just spanked us 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Right.
It was a very one-sided game. I thought the score didn't even do justice to how one-sided that game was. I mean, you're right. If you look at the records, it's a 2-5 team playing a 1-6 team. You know, it should be a competitive game. I have a hard time believing this team can stay competitive with anyone based on the way they've stopped the run the last 3 weeks.
Exactly. And the Jets can run the ball. So I think it's going to be really tough for them. I think it's going to be, I think their backs are going to be against the wall. And look, if you can't get your offense on the fields, you know, if your defense is out there the entire time, look, what do you expect? I mean, we just talked about Drake May being our bright spot. If your bright spot's on the bench while your defense is getting ran all over, how do you expect to compete?
Exactly. I mean, right now, and the other piece of this, Justin, is like, you know, we look at this and say, this is potentially a winnable game because, okay, they're 2-5 and we're 1-6. It doesn't look so bad. Every team in the NFL right now looks at the Patriots like they're the get right game, right?
Yeah.
The Patriots are Troy State right now. They're like Appalachian State. They're McNeese State. They're UMass. They're the team that, like, you know, the Division I school schedule so they can have an easy win on their docket. That is what the Patriots are now. And I guarantee that's how the Jets are looking at this team as a get right game.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And if they can't beat the Patriots, the Jets, and it really screwed.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. I just want to see them be competitive. At this point, it's not about wins and losses because it's probably in the grand scheme of things, you know, before I say that, let me ask you real quick before we move on.
Yeah.
Are you in the camp that you would rather see this team now win 5 or 6 games? Or would you rather see? But the caveat is they only win a game or two, but they're still very competitive, and you see the development of Drake May and these young weapons.
No, I think that I want them to win because I do not feel like they need to get a number one draft pick again. They've got their quarterback. That's why you need the high draft pick. Now that you have that, I feel like there are good players that can be found all across the draft board in every round of the draft and in free agency. I do not want them to bottom out. I want them to develop young players, including Drake May, but also some of these other guys. I want them to show progress, and I want them to win games.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
What about you?
I mean, you know, I just look at how much help this team needs, right? And I know what a high draft pick can do, not only in terms of your ability to increase the chance that you hit on successful talent, but the ability to potentially trade down and do 2-for-1s and gain additional capital. So, like, to me, I think the ideal scenario would be this team competes. They clearly have some, you know, player development and progression. You know, we see Christian Gonzalez continue to perform. We see Drake May continue to grow and improve. We see these young receivers continue to grow and improve. We start to identify some other players that we, you know, want to keep around as part of the plan for next year. But they lose close games. They lose close games. They wind up with a high draft pick, and we're able to either hit on somebody with a high probability or gain ourselves additional draft capital to plug a lot of these holes.
Well, the one thing I will say, and I do agree with you on this, is if they do get that number one pick or one of those really high draft picks. I don't want them to take one single player there.
I agree.
I think that's where they have so many holes that could be their ship coming in to get the chance to fill multiple holes. And I think they'd have to take that opportunity.
Right.
All right. Last topic. And then we're going to wrap up this edition of the Dr. Football podcast, Ultimate Patriots podcast. You look at what Akinyele, what's his name? Daniel Ukulele said today, after the game, pointing the finger at effort. Devin Godchow has pointed the finger at effort. KJ Osborne's tweet from his agent, which I don't know why that was put on social media. Jalen Polk, the things he said, this week, the peace sign and the black screen emoji. Barmore getting arrested. Peppers getting arrested. Don't forget Jalen Reagor getting cut for what he posted on social media. Chuksakor for walking away from the team. Justin, there is a major culture problem on this team right now. Why does this team have such a culture problem? And is this devolving into a mutiny type situation?
Well, why the team has such a culture problem, that's a much larger conversation. But is it developing into a potential mutiny type situation? I mean, look, you're not winning. You're not playing well. You have disarray on and off the field. You don't probably have a ton of trust or faith in your coaching staff. It's really easy for these distractions to start to add up. And I think, look, these type of problems breed more problems. When you're not winning and you're running into issues and you don't respect your coaches, that is like the recipe for disaster. That's how new problems get created and existing problems become worse. So yeah, I definitely think that you could potentially be on a collision course with just a blow up if you don't find a way to right the ship soon.
I mean, I think it's going to be really interesting to see this week, given Mail's soft comment, which way this team goes. If they come out and they look like they're flat and they give up 220 yards rushing and get trounced again, that is a very, I think, alarming sign for the direction this thing is headed. Now, if they come out and they play hard this week, I think you can take something from that. I really do. But right now, they do have a major culture problem on this organization, and Mayo has completely lost control of this locker room. And, we'll see if he's able to get it back. Like, I wonder, and we hit on this at the beginning of the podcast, I wonder at what point does this become not salvageable? And I think that losing was something we all expected going into this year. The culture problem, well, I think, has been unexpected. And I think it's an added complication to what they're trying to do, added setback. And I think that it will, at some point, if this keeps going, this will devolve to a point that is not salvageable.
Yeah, it's definitely approaching that point. And look, the worst thing that a team, I think, can happen to a team is for them to lose faith in their leadership, right? And not respect their coaching staff and the people that are, leading them in and out of the facilities every day. And that's what this team is on the verge of. And when you're not winning, that becomes worse. When your coach is making comments, inflammatory comments, that becomes worse. When guys start to drop from the team due to injuries, off the field issues, that the problem becomes worse. So everything is trending in the wrong direction right now for this team, and they have to find a way to reverse that. I think it's pretty simple.
Yeah. And like you said, it might not even be winning this Sunday, but being competitive. And playing like an NFL team and playing hard. And I think that you will be able to get a real tell for which way the rest of the season is going to go from the game Sunday against the Jets, where if they come out and they're not invested and it's obvious, I mean, watch out below, because then this is when this really devolves. It really could devolve, I think, faster and worse than any of us ever thought it would.
Yeah.
All right. Any other thoughts on this franchise, Justin, this team, the state of things, the game Sunday, last Sunday, anything else on the past before we wrap this up?
No, that about does it for me.
That about does it for me too. We want to thank everyone that listened to this episode of the Dr. Football Podcast. Thank you very much. Find us on Facebook, Spotify, YouTube, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. We are there. We will catch you all next week with a new episode, and look out for our Around the League podcast, which will drop on Thursday. Have a great, great, great week, everyone.